Number 17. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the Israelites and get 12 staffs from them, one from the leader of each of their ancestral tribes. Write the name of each man on his staff. On the staff of Levi, write Aaron's name. For there must be one staff for the head of each ancestral tribe. Place them in the tent of meeting in front of the testimony, where I meet with you. The staff belonging to the man I choose will sprout, and I will rid myself of this constant grumbling against you by the Israelites." So Moses spoke to the Israelites, and their leaders gave him 12 staffs, one for each leader of each of the ancestral tribes, and Aaron's staff was among them. Moses placed the staffs before the Lord in the tent of the testimony. The next day, Moses entered the tent of the testimony and saw that Aaron's staff, which represented the house of Levi, had not only sprouted, but had budded, blossomed, and produced almonds. Then Moses brought out all the staffs from the Lord's presence to all the Israelites. They looked at them, and each man took a staff. The Lord said to Moses, "Put back Aaron's staff in front of the testimony, to be kept as a sign to the rebellious. This will put an end to their grumbling against me, so that they will not die." Moses did just as the Lord commanded him. The Israelites said to Moses, "We will die. We are lost. We are all lost. Anyone who even comes near the tabernacle of the Lord will die. Are we all going to die?"
Before I ask any questions here, as you can tell, this is a continuation of the 16th chapter. Remember what took place in the 16th chapter? We have the rebellion of Korah and the rebellion of, what's his other name? Dathan, however you want to pronounce that. And certain things that took place. Now we're at the point now where God is now going to address another issue. Okay. So the story is kind of continuous, but yet, are there any questions? Comments?
I remember as a child, somebody sent us a gift from Israel, and it was Aaron's rod.
Oh, yeah?
And supposedly it was supposed to bud if you set it on like a sponge with water or whatever. And we were just kind of amazed. It actually budded. I was maybe 7 years old. I had no idea the significance at that point, but I was just quickened of that, and it probably got thrown away. As soon as you remove it from the water, it stops budding.
Interesting.
But
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I wish I still had to this day. It would mean so much more to me now. You know, that was 40 years ago.
I think it's a symbolism of how the bud would work, or how it would work in a short period of time with almonds. Probably at a critical point in time, that was probably still a fresh twig or fresh.
Yeah, I really don't know. Again, I was only about 7.
Yeah. That's interesting.
I can't remember all the details around it, but I was absolutely amazed that Aaron's rod even still existed, and that we could put this, and it was there.
That would be a holy of holy things. I don't know if anybody would cut it up. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting that you look at the idea of a staff, because a staff is something that's most likely been around for a while, so it's well dead, and having it come to life, you know,
okay.
Basically that what we read about later about the Spirit of God bringing life
to that which is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Any more comments? Why an almond tree? Why an almond a branch or bush?
The almond is first to bloom in January. Late January.
The menorah has almonds.
Okay.
Almonds on it.
Yeah, symbolism of the almond, symbolism of that cup where the light comes out of in the menorah. And that's a little bit interesting to know this relationship to it. Now, he had to give all of the other leaders of Israel the same kind of rod. In other words, each one got an almond rod. It wasn't this little trick that you get this one, Aaron gets the almond one, and the rest of them get, you know, a piece of, you know, redwood. No. or of whatever. They all got the same thing. Now, why did God do this?
Stop the grumbling of the people.
What was the grumbling about?
Leadership.
About what?
Leadership.
A specific leader. All right, because it was dealt with in the 16th chapter of the leadership of Moses, relatively quick. But it wasn't completely finished. Now, why is it that God went to this particular detail of taking the rod and putting it into the tent and Moses leaving and one rod only? How many rods were there, by the way? 13. Listen very carefully what's going on here. All right. Let's see. Verse 6. And so Moses spoke to the children of Israel, and each of their leaders gave him a rod apiece, for each leader according to their own house, 12 rods. And the rod of Aaron was amongst them. So a rod of Aaron was added to it, making it 13. Okay, so you look at 13 rods. There wasn't 12, there was 13 total. There had their 12. Remember, the tribe of Levite wasn't to have any inheritance. Alright? Their function was to do what?
Serve
the tabernacle and serve the people for whenever they're wanting to bring up to or before God. And in the next chapter we go into it, it'll be more in detail. But we're seeing here now that what he wants to do is to prove a point. Now it's interesting, remember I said last week, when they saw the death of Korah and Dathan and his group opened up, right? And what did, because remember, it was Moses who made those statements. It wasn't God who made those statements. And what was the people's reaction? You have killed them. Remember, they don't see the hand of God. We have to be very careful that we assume, looking back on all our understanding, is that these people saw the act of God. No, all they saw was a cloud. All right? Now, in the case of Aaron's two sons, that was within the service of the tabernacle, and so the people didn't see that, but Aaron's sons did see it, and so to Moses, they were in the process of doing something, and it wasn't open for the whole world to see at that point in time. And so they knew, from Aaron knew really quickly, this is from the hand of God. He saw the fire come out and down their end. They killed. Now, you have an incident here where God says, now they're going to know something from this incident, because guess what, Moses? You cannot make this happen. Well, he didn't tell Moses that, but he's telling the people, I'm going to bring forth this rod, and that rod's going to bring forth not only bud, it's going to have blossoms on it, and it's going to have seeds. Now, that's pretty fast. Overnight. And then God turns around and says something about. First, it was they complained against Moses, right? Now he comes back over here in verse 10, and the Lord said to Moses, bring Aaron's rod back before the testimony to be kept in the as a sign between the rebels, that they may put their burden away from me, lest they die. You know, and then the people really got scared. It's like all of a sudden they really paid, I'm going to die. Yes, Daniel.
Well, in the people's defense,
Carol, in other words,
that every time that something important happens, they die.
Every time so.
Korah dies. Their hunger for meat, people die.
Yes.
Their hunger for water, people die.
The plague comes, they die.
Everybody dies. Well, yeah, I think of the same thing. Holy cow,
we're all gonna die, you know. So don't come near that tent, you know. Don't go near that tabernacle meeting, because we're gonna be dead if we do, you know. Like, shall we all die? Well, yeah, the answer is yes, because God said so. So they had to learn by fear to respect that it is Aaron he has chosen. Now remember, this is not telling the people, it is Moses I have chosen. It's Aaron I have chosen. Now, what was it? The crown that Aaron was supposed to wear? What did it say on it?
The Holy
One unto the Lord. Moses didn't get to wear that one. Aaron gets to wear that one. So now we know that the office of the function of Aaron is quite radically different than any of the others, Levite, or any, including Moses, because Moses was Levite, but he was not of the descendant of Aaron, right? Just a brother of Aaron, but not a descendant of Aaron. All right, any comments?
Well, question comes up as to why is there only, I guess, one person that's set up as the conduit between someone and God? It's the argument that is brought by Miriam and Aaron originally against Moses. Why does God only speak to you? And then it was brought up later with Korah and these other folks as to why only Aaron? And it's brought up even today as to why only the God of the Bible? Why not Gaia? Why not Buddha? Others?
Anybody want to answer this question or make a comment about it? I mean, you'd be open, you know. What? Yes, Daniel.
How many really close best friends do you have?
Not many.
Yeah, not many. Now, women have tends to have a few more best friends. Guys that I've met usually have one.
One.
That they're that close to. I think it's a property that God has built inside of people in general. Even women usually have just one really best friend, and they have others that are really, really close. But I think it's that you will talk to, visit with, communicate more openly with that one best friend, more so than you will with all the other friends. I think it's part of our emotional base, how we're built, and God has designed it the same way. Now, of course, try to argue that with somebody who does not believe in that particular God, then it's a mute point. It doesn't value anything. But I think that's why he chooses just one. Because we all choose just one.
Yeah, we'll give a backup there. Can you give another example?
Sure.
Who was Jesus' best friend?
John.
John. That was very obvious, scripturally wise. So it's nothing that's unusual. But to get back to your question, why would God only choose one? Man, he is not a one who runs by committees. I mean, when you get a committee running something, what happens? Nothing gets done.
At least not quickly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all due respect to the man I work for now, not really the man I work for, but the company I work for right now, they don't have a single person that anybody's answerable to. It's a committee. It's called the management. And when a decision has to be made, and I have forced this issue personally because I had to get a decision made, and so I made the number one manager, which he's supposed to be the manager of all managers, had to make a decision. Because once a decision has been made, things can happen. So we're looking here, let's talk about just Aaron here for just a moment, okay? Now when Aaron and Miriam rebelled and wanted to be a joint leadership, what country in the face of earth, or even business in the face of earth, works with joint leadership?
It did not work well in history.
It never has worked because always going to have somebody who's going to be in charge. Now, in God's wisdom, it's relatively easy for him to change the attitude, the mind, the heart of the person he wants in charge. Right? Somebody has to be lead. Somebody has to be responsible. Somebody has to be held accountable for what is happening to the community or to the organization or whatever it is. And the reason why I'm here is because I have to be held accountable. That's it. But that's it. You're still held accountable for your conducts. Mm-hmm. Privately, yes. But for as far as our ecclesia is concerned, I'm held accountable. And why am I held accountable? Because I chose. I don't know. I think because mere fact it fell in line, you know. But God does not work with committees. Now he'll work with the 70 elders. Trouble is, who the 70 elders have to answer to?
Moses.
Now, in the relationship to priesthood, you still have this very same thing. Only one can be high priest. Otherwise, by the word of God would have, how would they have that? Multiple high priests. I don't know what the word would be in Hebrew.
There can be a bureaucracy.
Bureaucracy. Nothing would get done then. It took David during the time of David for him to straighten out a bureaucracy that was being established, God had begun to become established within the priesthood, and he separated it so there would be organization going through. Even David was over the priesthood. He gave orders to what they would do, when and how they're going to serve. He started the whole thing. You know, it's just, so someone has to be held accountable for it, and that's what God works. And yes.
Well, God took them out of Canaan land, put them down to Egypt. They multiplied. They were just 12 sons, blah, blah, blah. They got to be a big tribe. Now they're on their way to Mount Sinai to get the law. So God is just newly establishing his light penetrating into a dark world. And this is how he's doing it through one person, which will later on spread.
Right. And he began to work with Moses.
Right.
Now, was Moses a brave man?
No. He was afraid.
Now, did he look like he should have been a leader? Born leader?
No.
In fact, he was downright scared. He tried to back out of it several times, right? Because, you know, it's a big task. So when you're looking at someone like, yes?
I didn't mean to stop you in the middle of the sentence. I was just figuring out. We both want to make a comment. Go ahead.
Oh, during David's time, we broke the priesthood up into service in individual sectors throughout the year. Because the high priest would have been broken up, I presume, because you have with John Baptist, his father being in there. Only high priest can be in there. He wasn't high priest year-round.
No.
So they had many high priests.
It's a rotation of it.
Yeah, but it was just sections.
Correct, a section, a period of time.
High priests would show up, at least during Messiah's time, they had at least, what?
Well, yeah,
some odd high priests?
There's two of them we know for sure. One was Caiaphas, one was Ellen.
Ananias,
yeah. You know, they were still living. They still were alive. But the rotation of the priest was changed. And the high priest was changed, yes.
So you had somebody who was accountable for 2 weeks out of the year.
Yeah. Well, at least somebody was accountable, yes.
Well, also, I think it's a bigger reason than all that. There's one God, and there's one Messiah.
He's been working with one in whatever position he put them in ever since. He uses one to deal with more, one to deal with more, and it goes up. He doesn't have 10 messiahs or a committee of messiahs.
And only got one has to serve the temple. Only one has to serve that inner sanctuary or the Holy of Holies. Yes?
So is this a situation where not only... You got Miriam and Aaron, and then later on the other Levites, and then later on all of the tribes have to understand that God is working that way through his close friends. His close friend would be Moses, and then down through Aaron, who is his chosen one, not just anybody, and then down through, basically learning to respect who God has chosen,
not do your own choosing.
Yeah.
But you know, later on, Joshua doesn't have nearly the problems leading the people that Moses had.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. In Joshua's case, he was given a caveat early on, a description, something that Moses was never given from God. God told Joshua, "All right, this is how you're going to do it. You do this particular thing, then you will never have the problems that Moses had." Because Moses didn't have that character. He's a character flaw. It was something that Joshua didn't have.
Yeah. Joshua was a good student. He learned a lot. All right, so we are... you want to go to the 18th chapter?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's related to it.
Chapter 18. The Lord said to Aaron, "You, your sons, and your father's family are to bear the responsibility for offenses against the sanctuary, and you and your sons alone are to bear the responsibility for offenses against the priesthood. Bring your fellow Levites from your ancestral tribe to join you and assist you when you and your sons minister before the tent of the testimony. They are to be responsible to you and are to perform all the duties of the tent. But they must not go near the furnishings of the sanctuary or the altar, or both they and you will die. They are to join you and be responsible for the care of the tent of meeting, all the work at the tent. And no one else may come near where you are. You are to be responsible for the care of the sanctuary and the altar, so that wrath will not fall on the Israelites again. I myself have selected your fellow Levites from among the Israelites as a gift to you, dedicated to the Lord and to the work at the tent of meeting. But only you and your sons may serve as priests in connection with everything at the altar and inside the curtain. I am giving you the service of the priesthood as a gift. Anyone else who comes near the sanctuary must be put to death." Then the Lord said to Aaron, "I myself have put you in charge of the offerings presented to me. All the offerings the Israelites give me, I give you and your sons as a portion in a regular share. You are to have the part of the most holy offerings that is kept from the fire. From all the gifts they bring me as most holy offerings, whether grain or sin or guilt offerings, that part belongs to you and your sons. Eat it as something most holy. Every male shall eat it. You must regard it as holy. This also is yours. Whatever is set aside from the gifts of all the wave offerings of the Israelites, I give this to you and your sons and daughters as a regular share. Everyone in your household who is ceremonially clean may eat it. I give you all the finest olive oil and all the finest new wine and grain they give the Lord as the first fruits of their harvest. All the land's first fruits that they bring to the Lord will be yours. Everyone in your household who is ceremonially clean may eat it. Everything in Israel that is devoted to the Lord is yours. The first offspring of every womb, both man and animal, that is offered to the Lord is yours. But you must redeem every firstborn son and every firstborn male of unclean animals. When they are a month old, you must redeem them at the redemption price set at 5 shekels of silver, according to the sanctuary shekel, which weighs 20 gerahs. But you must not redeem the firstborn of any ox, a sheep, or a goat. They are holy. Sprinkle their blood on the altar and burn their fat as an offering made by fire, an aroma pleasing to the Lord. Their meat is to be yours, just as the breast of the wave offering and the right thigh are yours. Whatever is set aside from the holy offerings the Israelites present to the Lord, I give to you and your sons and daughters as a regular share. It is an everlasting covenant of salt before the Lord for both you and your offspring." The Lord said to Aaron, "You will have no inheritance in their land, nor will you have any share among them. I am your share and your inheritance among the Israelites. I give to the Levites all the tithes in Israel as an inheritance in return for the work they do while serving at the tent of meeting. From now on, the Israelites must not go near the tent of meeting, or they will bear the consequences for their sin and will die. It is the Levites who are to do the work at the tent of meeting and bear the responsibility for offenses against it. This is a lasting ordinance for the generations to come. They will receive no inheritance among the Israelites. Instead, I give to the Levites as their inheritance the tithes that the Israelites present as an offering to the Lord. That is why I said concerning them, they will have no inheritance among the Israelites." The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the Levites and say to them, when you receive from the Israelites, the tithe I give you as your inheritance, you must present a tenth of that tithe as the Lord's offering. Your offering will be reckoned to you as a grain from the threshing floor or juice from the winepress. In this way, you also will present an offering to the Lord from all the tithes you receive from the Israelites. From these tithes you must give to the Lord's portion to Aaron the priest. You must present as the Lord's portion the best and holiest part of everything given to you. Say to the Levites, when you present the best part, it will be reckoned to you as the product of the threshing floor or the winepress. You and your households may eat the rest of it anywhere, for it is your wages for your work at the tent of meeting. By presenting the best part of it, you will not be guilty in this matter. Then you will not defile the holy offerings of the Israelites, and you will not die.
What do you see here?
First time God ever spoke directly to Aaron.
Got you. Listen to that very carefully. First time he spoke directly to Aaron, three times. What else do you see here? What did God say to Aaron?
He take responsibility. They take responsibility for the sins.
Okay, so number one, you are now to carry the burden of the sins of the house of Israel. Now, bring that forward. I told you many times that Aaron represented what?
The Levites.
The high priest. Your high priest, my high priest, and our high priest bears the responsibility. He bears the burden. He bears our sins. He bears our iniquities. He bears it, and he has to what?
Yes, for them, sacrifice.
All right. So, in the case with the Messiah, of course, he sacrificed himself. So we're seeing here a picture. Now, listen very carefully what it is that he, Aaron, got. What did Aaron receive? First of all, we'll backtrack just a little bit. What were the Levites to receive?
The portions from the offerings.
From the people, whatever offering they're going to give, he gave the people. Now, what were the Levites supposed to do with it?
Give a tenth of it to Aaron and his sons.
And later we'll find out that they must give the very best. Not the first one, not the tenth one in the line, but they must give the very best of that tenth one to Aaron and his sons. All right, now what else is it telling us? Do we see anything else? Move quickly, please, into a statement that Jesus said. I will build my ecclesia. And what do you tell his disciples? You are my what?
Friends.
Friends and brothers. They become, the apostles become relatives. They are inheriting the very same thing the high priest gets to inherit. Do you understand so far what I'm saying? So we look at the family of Aaron, or the priestly line of Aaron, the ones that his sons and his grandsons, they are joined by being related to Aaron. Now, with the Messiah, the apostles are joined to be related to Jesus. They become, in a sense, a high priest, in a relationship to the high priest. They are the ones that are the family of the Messiah. Now, what about the other Levites? What were they supposed to do? They couldn't serve in the temple, could they? They couldn't serve in the most holy of holy. They couldn't offer unto God the gifts. They had to do something else. They received it from the congregation or the family, all of Israel, and they're supposed to take of it and give it to the family of Aaron. Right? So we're seeing something of a picture here. Now it says here that Moses was what? Faithful in the house. And what does it say in Hebrews about Jesus? He is even more worthy because he is building his house. So he is actually bringing in family. And he brought in these people, the apostles, because we believe. Why we believe what we believe is because what he, the Messiah, told the apostles. And we are, our faith, our belief is based upon the foundation of the apostles. That's correct? They are, in a sense, connected. They are, in a sense, members of the family directly with the high priest. We are not there. We're not directly related to him in the same fashion, the same, I'm using a parallel here, please understand what I'm saying. Yes, Jesus is our brother, not high brother, and he is our first brother. We understand that point, because that has to do with the call of the kingdom of God. But I'm not talking about the kingdom of God from it right now. I'm talking about the service of the sanctuary. And Jesus is the only one that could serve that sanctuary, right? And his family, his sons, or his related ones, are the only ones that get to serve in that place. Now, what did Jesus say about all that the Father has given me?
I give you.
Huh? The Father turns around. Now, here we see a picture here where God is saying to Aaron, I'm going to give you the Levites as a gift. I'm going to give you the best portion of the meat. I'm going to give you, they are yours. I'm giving them to you, Aaron. They're yours. And then he said, where are you to partake of it, Aaron? There's certain things that God said to Aaron, that when certain foods are given to you, you must eat it in a
holy place,
a sanctified place, a sanctified place. Now, what about the rest of the daughter? What are the daughters? What about the rest of the kids? What about the rest of the Levites? Do they get part of it? Yeah, they get it. They get to eat some of it, but they don't get the best. This is not saying that Aaron is better than anybody else. It's a picture that the Messiah gets the best of the best. Why? Why should he get the best of the best?
Because he's holy unto the Lord. He is.
Oh, let's get a little closer to that. I mean, it's a good statement. Yes, I'm not going to disagree with that.
He's the king.
He's what?
He's the king.
No, he bears the burden of the sins, transgressions, and the inequities. We're talking about a man who does carry the burden. He does it like he says, okay, I have to take your... Picture in our minds, if you can... What man do you know that would say, I'm going to take all the responsibilities of whatever you did wrong. I'm going to pay for the price of everything you did wrong. I'm going to take a God, I'll answer to God, and God's going to punish me because of, not my sins, because of your sins. You know, what man would do that? I mean, that's a really tough role to follow, right? So we're not really seeing here, we're seeing a picture of what when the high priest was appointed and called by God and his rod blossomed. Which one do you choose? Now, so when you think about Aaron's rod blossoming, what was it? What happened to it? It was dead?
It was put into the Ark of the Covenant.
Yes, afterwards.
It awakened.
It awakened. Dead, now comes to life. Okay, now what happened to our high priest before he was high priest?
He
was dead and then came alive. The picture is telling us a story. The rod is a picture of not just a stick, but a rod. Now, what does a rod represent?
Authority.
Authority, responsibility, rulership. I am going to the rod of the shepherd, as well as the one, you're going to have an iron one too, it says there in the book of Revelations. You don't want to have to be hit with that one. But it just means that Aaron, the picturing of that rod, of that rod has to do the picture of the Messiah taking charge and handling it. What he is now dead, he is now alive, he got full authority. That rod that's in the hands of the Messiah is a living rod. Not a dead one. You understand what I'm saying? If I lost anybody. So we're reading these stories here. It's very fascinating to know. We're looking at a picture here that seems archaic. Kind of like, okay, what's the purpose behind all this stuff? Why must Aaron carry the burden? Why must Aaron do all the things he has to do to justify, use the terminology, to justify the sins of the iniquities and transgressions of the people? Day of Atonement, he had to carry the burden. Why must any man have to carry the burden? No man in his right mind would carry the burden. I'm not going to be responsible for what you people do. You're responsible for what you do. That's right?
Right.
I'm no high priest, by the way. I just want you to know that right now. But you understand that when we're looking at a physical thing, it's telling us a physical story, a physical picture has got to connect with the spirit world. Because what did Jesus say? If I tell you worldly things, how can I explain to you spiritual things? And he used what? Well, being born of water, being born of spirit. It's still a hard concept for an awful lot of people to understand. But he says, if you don't understand that, Nicodemus, then you don't understand what I'm talking about. So when we look at the Torah, yes, it's telling us the responsibility. We're talking what God is saying, not what Aaron did first. We're seeing what God is saying to Aaron. And picture in your mind, if you can, we're talking about where the Father himself is addressing the Messiah. He says, this is what I am telling you. You will bear the burden. You'll be responsible. First thing we heard, he's responsible. He's held accountable. Well, that's unfair. Yeah, but why would God want Aaron to be responsible? What does it picture? What did Aaron do in the previous, in the chapter, end of chapter 16? What did he do?
He had the incense,
and he ran into death. Literally ran in straight face to death, and the people lived. Symbolism of the Messiah runs and stomps death for you and for me on a spiritual plane. All right. So when we see this picture here, now the church, or the ecclesia of God, or ecclesia of Jesus, is a picture of the Levites. You are, in a sense, spiritual Levites. You are, in a sense, are to take what are the offerings that people give to you. And I don't mean literally now. You understand what I'm saying? And then you are to offer it unto the high priest. First, you got to offer it unto the sons of Aaron. So how would you offer something to Matthew? How would you offer something to John? How would you offer something to Andrew? How would you offer, name them all off. How would you offer something? What would they want? What would they want? Well, this is what they're supposed to receive. And Moses spoke to Aaron, Moses rather, verse 25, and speaking to the Levites, and say to them, when you take of the children of Israel the tithe which I have given you from them your as your inheritance, then you shall offer a heave offering, which means a 10% of it unto the Lord, a tenth of a tithe, or a tithe of a tithe. And of course, that's given unto Moses. The best is given unto the high priest. So what we do, we must give unto our high priest the best. What are we supposed to give him? Sorry, what? Okay. What would you give him today? That's a question, isn't it? Well, what would you give him today?
Our lives.
Okay. We do this and you don't know it. Go ahead.
One thing, he offers us a deal and we accept it.
Faith is a pretty big one. All right.
Heart.
Huh?
Our heart.
Our heart. To love the Lord your God with your heart, all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength. Okay. A lot of words. We don't know the meaning of it sometimes. But, you know, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to fall upon apostle here. You don't mind. Where I got to go to the book of Romans. And most of you probably know exactly where I'm going to go to, right?
Present your body.
The what?
Present your body as a living sacrifice.
This is your reasonable sacrifice. This is what he wants from you. So you are going to, this is what you would give unto the quote priesthood. And that is chapter 12 of Romans. I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. That's right. Your life is the big thing that you're going to give. Holy. No. He didn't say just sacrifice your life. He didn't say just give him your life. He says give him the clean one. All right. The clean one, the holy one, is what you give to your fellow, I shouldn't say the brothers of Jesus, okay, or his ecclesia, the leadership that he has given, because every organization has to have a leadership, and within it, they have to have leaders of themselves. That is, and there's why there's 12. And why they had 12 apostles. Okay, and holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And, verse 2, do not be conformed to this world, but transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable, perfect will of God. So now our sacrifice, what we're giving to God, is something different. Instead of giving them our sins and transgressions or iniquities, because see, that was already taken away from us. Because see, the priest already took it. The priest already held the responsibility for it, and the priest already paid for it, meaning the Messiah. So now we come into here, and we got this one, and he says, now, since that's been done, what are you going to do in exchange? Well, you're going to give him the tithe of the tithe. That's what you're going to give him.
The best of the best.
The best of the best. Simplest way you can put it, the best of the best. Don't give God mediocre things. That's not what he wants. He wants it to be something quite different. Then I say, verse 3, I say, through the grace is given unto me, that everyone who is among you not to think more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly as God has dealt each one at a moment of faith. Now, what does that mean? There's a degree of how much God has given us. How much faith has he given to us? Not as a group, but as individuals.
A measure.
I'm sorry, what?
You said a measure.
A measure. It's an amount. It's not unlimited. What were the Levites supposed to do with the amount they had?
Give the best of whatever they were giving.
Give the best of whatever they were giving? Yes.
They're supposed to give it to
the high priest, the family of the high priest. So we come along here in verse 4, and he says, as we have many members in one body, but all members do not have the same function. So we, being many, are one body in Christ, individually members of one another, having the gift differing according to the grace that was given to us. If prophecy, then do it. If ministry, do it. But not just do it, because it's holy. Prophesying or inspiring is holy. Just don't be inspired because of what you want to do. Don't be inspired because it's the thing to do. What you are inspired to do must be holy. What ministry you're going to do must be holy. What teaching you're going to do must be holy. Best of the best. Not just teaching, but the best of the teaching. Do you understand what I'm saying now? And he says these are reasonable services. Wow. Well, yet, what you look at you, when you people go out there and you do your praise dancing, you do your praise singing, are you doing what is holy? Are you doing the best? Okay? You see what I'm saying? It's the best that is presented before God, before Jesus and those that He has appointed over us. And every one of the apostles have been appointed. I don't know which one he appointed you or me individually to, but nonetheless, one has been appointed to teach us and to give us and to show us, and we give him the best. And what is he supposed to do symbolically now? He gives it unto God. Apostle Paul said that his job was to present, I think it was the book of Corinthians, to present the body holy and pure unto God. That's the job of the apostle. All right? And that's his function. And that's what the priest in Leviticus were supposed to do. Present to God that which is holy. And certain things are more holier than others. Firstborn of a cow. You don't barter that away. Firstborn of a sheep, you don't barter that away. Other animals you can swap. You can have the license to change. You have the license to exchange something, but not certain things are not. They are holy. Yes?
In fact, when you consider holy things less important, it makes God angry. When there is blessing or inheritance or gift from God and you squander it or you waste it or you don't use it or even neglect the value of it, you can be in trouble. He has a parable about not appreciating, not using it, burying your gifts. Doesn't mean leave. Like sometimes as women, as mothers, it's like, oh, I want to go out and do blah, 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 but I got four kids to take care of. Well, your job was to take care of the kids, and other jobs come too. But sometimes we count lightly.
Well, let's hope we don't. Okay.
Well, we have to be careful.
What we have to do is, you know, if we have to examine ourselves. What is our function? What do we do? What do we do in our daily life? How do we present unto God that which is holy? Whatever our hands do, whatever our functions do, whatever it is that God has granted to us, not just in the sanctuary, by the way, not just in the holy place, by the way, because he, we're in a sense, are in the holy place, if I can use that terminology, in the sense that we are here to learn. But we are not in the holy place. We're outside of the holy place. Does the function of the Levite change? Or does it remain the same?
Yeah. Because that's one of the things that Isaiah and the prophets specifically criticized him about, is that the priesthood was offering gifts at the altar, yet they were out cheating people and robbing and stuff other times. When they were not serving.
Eli's sons, we hope, so a good example right there. You know, the high priest and his sons of what he did. So anyway, when you go back and you look at these chapters 16, 17, and 18, it builds up a story telling you the conclusion, and 18th chapter tells you the final conclusion of why God chose who he chose, why he went to the method he went, and why he did not want anybody else other than Aaron, and didn't want anybody else other than Moses, because why God chose. And what did Jesus say to his disciples? I have chosen you, you have not chosen me. So we got the story that it is by the appointment that God makes the choice. It is by God who alters the situation. And as I said many times before, the fishermen stopped being fishermen. They had a new career. Probably didn't make as much money. No. I don't know what they did, how they made a living. But nonetheless, they didn't go out and fish anymore. They were out doing their function, their duty, their responsibility. And you can read that pretty heavily in the book of chapter. In the book of Acts, at least half of it, really strong, and they were constantly there at the temple, constantly doing that which was holy unto the Lord.